You are listening to Radiant Creators, a collaborative project composed of people whose passion, purpose, and dedication requires forging their own unique path of empowerment and livelihood. A Radiant Creator isn't making a living, they are living.
Clyde Lewis, welcome to Radiant Creators, and also we are simulcast on alternatecurrentradio.com, so you can find all of our stuff at Radiant Creators and alternatecurrentradio.com. So a little intro, I avoid reading text on the show because it sounds a little mechanical, but just for people who might by chance not know who you are, Clyde Lewis is a powerful voice in parapolitical and paranormal news and commentary with a diverse background in news, acting, writing, and radio. He entertains and captivates audiences across multiple platforms. Lewis's career in radio began in Utah in 1982, and he created Ground Zero in 1995 in Salt Lake City. And of course, Clyde Lewis, I think a good way to find info about you and the show would be groundzeromedia.org. So maybe fill in a few things that I might have missed about who's Clyde.
Well, I'm just a guy who just happened to be lucky enough to land a radio show, Ground Zero, that pretty much was me attempting to kind of report on the things my father always told me that I didn't really believe. And as time went on, I started realizing that there's something, you know, there's a lot of truth to, you know, the stories that a lot of people tell, most of the time that are considered fringe. And 20 years ago, you know, back then they were fringe, and now it seems that Ground Zero has evolved from being a conspiracy theory paranormal show to being a mainstream pop culture show, because most everything that is happening now is unbelievable, and it seems to be like a fulfilled prophecy of some kind. And I'm the guy that's basically trying to make heads or tails of parapolitical topics and paranormal topics and topics dealing with conspiracy theory. I really don't consider myself a conspiracy theorist, more so than a conspiracy theorist analyst. And so I just say I'm into fringe speculation. I'm into, you know, that sort of thing, developing a hypothesis surrounding the pop culture phenomenon of conspiracy theory. That's why, I've been able to talk with other people, other conspiracy theorists like Alex Jones and others, and people say, why do you talk to him? Why do you associate with him? Well, because, you know, they are the ones that are creating these stories, and these stories need to be analyzed for, you know, whether or not they're true or whether or not they're made up or whether or not they're disinformation. I mean, these are things that are very important right now in a time where we're certainly confused about what is truth, and that usually things like, you know, normalcy bias dictates what we believe is true. And so, you know, opinion is stated as fact now, when in reality it's just opinion.
And the thing about the word conspiracy theory itself, it's such a loaded topic. I mean, where did that ever come from? To me, empirical research and evidence and facts and reality, they just are. And now they've been diluted, I think, by that term conspiracy theory. I've always felt that that whole notion was really a counter to empirical research, to reality itself, to make you doubt reality.
Well, it was invented by the CIA. And it became a fashionable term as a pejorative since the Kennedy assassination. So that's where the term conspiracy theory comes from. Other people have called it heightened awareness or paranoid awareness. There's a lot of other terms that have been derived to describe what it is that people are. It's kind of like a discourse that needs to be had. And it's so sad that they're trying to remove it, because the discourse of questioning, or at least, you know, providing questions that aren't normally answered or even asked. And see, the problem that we face here in America and probably around the world is that conspiracy theory has now been like, you know, run of the mill, you know, take your pick, and people believe what they see on the internet, when there have been people who have studied conspiracy theory as a part of our history, which is exactly what it is. I mean, there's conspiracy history or conspiracy theory history, and there's also a history of what we call random acts of God or random histories. And so you have to kind of figure out if things that are happening are just random, or if there's some sort of pattern to these things happening, and whether or not these are well planned out, well thought out by a government, or well planned out, thought out by a religious group, or whomever. I mean, conspiracies and conspirators have been part of America since the very beginning of our founding fathers, because they conspired against a king in order to bring about this country.
Definitely. Well, one thing I wanted to focus on in this interview is, and thanks for being on the show, is how to be a great broadcaster. So you've been doing it for a while, and you're making it happen. You've been making it happen for a long time. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of, I guess you could say, as alternative media is becoming more and more prevalent, and more people are doing podcasts to help the young and aspiring get good. So your show, you do a 3-hour show, and to me that sounds so grueling to actually have.
I do five, actually. I do a 5-hour show, actually. Yes.
And that's and to me that sounds tremendously challenging. So, what does a day in the life of Clyde Lewis look like as you're gathering data for that show? And you always send out emails and such where they're very long. You put out your shows are very, very thoughtful. I mean, a lot of thought goes into it. Mm-hmm. How do you do it? Like, what is your regimen that allows you to create so much content and be on the air live so many hours?
Well, first of all, I'm always looking for stories. I'm constantly trying to look at angles, and I take in a lot of pop culture, a lot of movies, and a lot of TV, and a lot of book reading. And I'm constantly doing that. I'm reading the books that I'm sent of the guests. I have some knowledge of this because I've been at it now for about 25 years, and so I know, and I have great recall. My wife says it's a talent, it's a curse. I have great recall, she says, but I don't have common sense, and that's probably true. Being book learned and being a person my whole life who's just swallowed and consumed information, and have been like this information junkie for the longest time, and an infomaniac, if you will. Just picking up sources, and what I do is I wake up every morning. I get into the office around 11:30. I have study time between 11:30 and about 2. And I study my topic, or if I know of something in the pop culture that's coming up, I try to find a general topic that will teach the audience about why these types of things are happening. Like today, for example, my wife and I saw the movie Prodigy. It was one of these one-off horror films that we saw, and it dealt with something beyond possession of a child. It had something to do with walk-ins, where this child is possessed by the spirit of a killer who is from Romania, and he spoke a Romanian dialect that no one can understand. Well, I immediately, when I saw that, thought of things like walk-ins, which of course is a phenomenon where people sometimes believe that during a traumatic experience that a spirit that belongs to someone else entered into their body and they're no longer in control of themselves. It's kind of a different type of possession rather than having a demon possess you. It's something else. So I immediately look at that and I'm thinking, okay, there are many angles I can take on this, either demon possession, bad seed, child, or behaviors in children that would indicate that perhaps, there's something happening. There's the imaginary friend thing. I mean, there's so many different parts of a story that I can use as a way of talking. So you have to, when I was in earlier, when I became a news reporter, I was an affiliate news reporter for CNN in Salt Lake. And one of the things they taught us was the T-square method, where you go in and you basically make a T on a graph. You talk about the topic at hand, and then you have association with the topic. What can you associate with a young boy who's possessed by a serial killer? And then you go through and you look at all these cases from the past of children that have been possessed, or you look at other movies that you may be able to talk about, like perhaps comparable to The Omen, being the Antichrist and possessed by the devil, or you can talk about Rosemary's Baby. There's so many ways you can look at this, and you have to have a broad perspective of how you're going to tell the story, and you have to have a number of ways that if it goes a direction that you don't like, you can pull out and take it in another direction. So I can start out by talking about walk-in children. I can talk about black-eyed children. I can talk about, there's so many different topics and places where I can go in and say, well, if that doesn't work with the audience, I'll go this route. If that doesn't work, I'll go this route. And if anybody has any experience they want to relate to me, I take a phone call, and that even adds to the show. So I'm able to kind of expound upon what is being said by the caller because I have a knowledge of this because I've been studying it for as long as I have.
I've done a couple of shows on Rents Radio, and on those there was phone calls. They were part of the show. And also when I've done Blackwood Lister Radio, and I find that the calls are really challenging. They're fun. They invigorate the show. But how do you prepare when you're live on the air to take a call? Because when that call happens, anything can happen. You have no idea where this person is going to be coming from. I feel like I'm getting ready to run a 100-yard dash when they push that button.
Well, I have screeners. I have two screeners that screen the calls. I'm not like Art Bell. I remember Art Bell was kind of doing a free-for-all. And God help him. You know, God love him. He did a great job with calls like that. And, you know, he was one of those guys that that believed that wherever the show goes, he can play along with it. With me, I don't schedule shows. I know that George Norrie does that and Art Bell used to do that. I don't schedule shows ahead. Sometimes, though, if we're going to land a guest, the only time they can do the date, we schedule ahead. But I don't report schedules. And the reason why is because the earth is not on a schedule. The world is not on a schedule. So I have to go in and I have to say, this is the news today. This is what's going on. And I have to act on it. Like, for example, I have a choice today to talk about the Aurora shooting that just happened in Illinois. We're getting flashes and everything. And I can, if I can find an angle to talk about it, well, the only angle I have that's paranormal is there was a shooting, James Holmes, Aurora, Colorado in 2012, 7/20/2012 was when the shooting happened in Aurora, Colorado. Now today we have a shooting in Aurora, Illinois. So we're having this loop and I've talked about the Mobius loop and I've said, well, things happen in patterns. And so I could say, well, look at this pattern. And, you know, some people say it's a reach, but it's really not a reach. We see these repeating patterns, repeating names. It's called twilight language. And so a lot of the callers, when they call in, I have the screeners say to the caller, please keep to the topic. Please get to the point because I don't have much time. I always say I'm against the clock. See, a lot of people believe that I control the commercials, that I control this. And so if like they're talking about something and they're disagreeing with me, we go to commercial. They say, he cut me off because he doesn't want to argue with me about this. And this. People have these interpretations how they think talk radio works. It doesn't work like that at all. When you call a radio show, there are things that to be expected of the caller. Callers are like records. Back in the day, the DJ would spin the record, and if it sounded good, people would love the radio show. Well, callers are like records. If you spin a caller and the caller is a dud, that's lost time on the radio. So you have to get your screeners to encourage them to get right to the point, understand they're right against the clock. They have about 2 minutes to get out their thought. And if I'm interested in having the thought go further, I will then say, okay, well, let's talk more about this. Tell me more. And I can extend the call to, I mean, most calls would be about 7 minutes if I like the call. If I don't think they sound good or they're not really getting to their point, I get rid of them. And it's not because I'm malicious, but just because you call a radio show or a podcast does not mean that you get to get on. It means that you have to basically give something for the, it's an exchange. It's something that has to be done. It's a dynamic. If that dynamic is not met within 2 minutes, then the call's not worth it. I mean, especially in a situation where you're doing radio and you're being rated. There are, right now, it used to be that you could do a show, somebody would fill out a book that says, I listened to Clyde Lewis on Ground Zero, and you'd get the rating point. Now, it's not that at all. Now, it's people who have, like, wristbands that pick up on algorithms and certain tones that go out they monitor what words you say are tune out factors. And you sit with consultants, they say, well, you were talking about, what were you talking about? Oh, okay. The computer says you were talking about constitutional rights for blah, 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 blah. And you see that the radios were turning off about that time you were saying that. So chances are what you're saying here is a tune out factor. So you have to be very, very aware of what your listeners want to hear from you. You got to be very, very aware of, tact and presentation and just the way you present it. You have to be a storyteller now. It's not about I'm going on and I'm just going to like spout off my opinions. It has to be that you're a storyteller. And that's what I do is I tell a story and I tell several stories. And you can believe me or not believe me. I don't care. I want you to think outside the box. I'm going to tell you a story much in the way that Rod Serling did with The Twilight Zone. Much in the way that they did on Outer Limits, and now Black Mirror does the same thing. It's just the idea that you're telling a story. You're not expecting people to believe you, and I'm sure a lot of people think that's what I expect. but you expect people to think about what you're saying, analyze what you're saying, and then make a decision about how they feel about it. And chances are, if they like what you're saying, if they like the story, if they like this, it means that people are going to tune in again. And apparently they are tuning in again, and something's working, because we just had TalkStream Live, Radio Inc., and several other groups that analyze radio shows. And out of 28.6 million listeners on the internet that have developed surveys, I went in at number six as the sixth most listened to podcast from a radio show. And they've also developed other ratings for others. And you look at all the big money people like Michael Savage, Rush Limbaugh, Laura Ingram, Sean Hannity. They're all up there because they have a lot of money backing them at Fox or somewhere else. And they're in the public eye. I, on the other hand, am not in the public eye, and I managed to get into number six. So word spreading. I just got my 100,000th like on Facebook today. I'm very happy about that. So we are really doing well because of the things we apply, and that is storytelling. And we also paint pictures with sound as well. We do something called a sound montage that I've been doing since I began Ground Zero.
I do like those. They're great lead-ins and lead-outs. The sound montages. Well, one thing you mentioned about when you mentioned the mainstream media and comparing what you're doing to that, well, the mainstream media, to me, I believe at least, it doesn't really need to make money. I think it's funded from above, so they don't really have to put out quality. They just need to try to convince people, kind of clickbait them into listening.
Yeah, we're looking at a time where, you know, back in the day, you know, I come from both a rock and roll background and a news background. So you hear that in my shows because I do a lot of rock and roll stuff and I do a lot of news. But it's true. I mean, back in the day, you never paid for a story. Back in the day, you know, people didn't pay you to talk about things. Right now, I mean, let's say, for example, the shooter in Aurora doesn't get shot by cops and he's just taken into custody. There are agents, actually, that come forward and say, I will be your agent and I'll be booking all your interviews from now on CNN. And I will demand money for those interviews. It's just the way it is. There's big money to be made in confessions, and that's why it's hard to believe half the stuff you hear in the media. I mean, right now, the Smollett case, Jesse Smollett from Empire, he's now under the gun because he said that he was attacked. They were doing racial slurs. They were calling him names, and one guy was wearing a MAGA hat and all this other stuff. And it just sounded outrageous, especially at a time where it's in a safe area of Chicago. It's almost like 20 below zero, and this guy says he's being attacked and by those who are allegedly Trump supporters. Well, they brought the guys in that were in the photos, turned out to be Nigerians. And it's like, you know, you got to find a way to smell a story and decide whether or not it's a hoax or it's a tall tale. And I said from the beginning that I thought it was. I said to my producer, and he said, well, let's just wait it out. And I go, no, I can tell that this is a story. Now they're questioning his story. Because of the phone records that weren't submitted and a number of other things. And these Nigerians, I mean, I don't know if a Nigerian who's beating up some black homosexual star is saying this is MAGA territory. I don't think that's going to happen.
It seems like people need to learn to trust their gut and their natural human intuition a bit. And that's something people seem to be losing, that skill or that natural instinct, that connection to, well, their body and the world and common sense, because that story, I guess it's all sort of alleged. Maybe we don't know exactly what happened yet, but it never sounded correct, and it's only fallen apart since. So it just seems like a person should have heard that first thing and gone, you know, this is a cartoon. This is make-believe.
Well, the sad thing about it is it weighs against basically these prejudices we've developed that are kind of these reverse prejudices, such as that right now, you do not criticize anyone of race. You don't criticize anyone of sexual orientation, or even if you are transgender. It's not wise to criticize. It's in fact, it's against the law because of all these strict laws. And I don't understand how militant people can get, but they are getting militant, and they're militant for everything. It's like that standoff that happened between that Native American and that young boy from Kentucky. You know, they've now said that there was no standoff, that none of this happened the way the media reported it. And now that young boy is suing all the media outlets for this. And I think he should. And the reason why is because even when you are watching that video, anyone can watch something now, put a sentence underneath it and say that it's happening when it's not happening. That's the scary part, is that that young man was standing there just smiling at that guy. And yet they said he was, that smile was a taunt. I didn't see any taunting. I just saw a guy smiling. Now, these other kids in the background, now, I don't know what they were doing. And maybe some of them were taunting the guy. But if you look at the whole video, you see they were just chanting their school chant. And yet people still to this day will take a side and say, well, he was taunting that guy. Well, no, he really wasn't taunting anybody. And it's not because of the fact that he wore a MAGA hat or anything else. And it's just a mess because the media took it out of context, and then people will believe what they're told. You can say, no, you're not looking at a blue sky. You're looking at a red sky. And if they keep pushing it, people say, you know what? It's not true. That blue sky is an illusion. They finally told us the truth that the sky is red. And that's what's going on with the media. And it's really sad that it's happening, because I think half the time when I used to be told that what I had to say was outrageous, I shake my head and I'm going, I think I sound more sane than the media does. You know, it's just a different dichotomy.
Definitely. And in that particular story, I mean, since when is standing and grinning a form of assault? That's kind of silly. I don't quite get why it was ever a story in the first place. And
microaggressions.
Yeah, microaggressions.
But I didn't even see that. I didn't even see a microaggression. And that's why I think it's difficult to handle here, is that, and you know what it is? It's because of politics. It's because of how politics have become so militant, divided, and almost insane on both sides. I mean, look, I can do a show where the minute I mention President Trump, I say President Trump this or President Trump that, I get at least three or four emails on one side saying, how dare you insult our president, and have other people saying, see, we knew you were a Trump supporter all along. You're showing your bias. I'm thinking, how is it that you get that I'm showing bias when I write and talk about maybe a conspiracy against the president or a conspiracy where the president's involved? And that's just it. No one wants to hear that a president is being a human being. No one wants to hear that a guy that they've already decided they were going to hate is doing anything good. I remember when President Trump had his State of the Union address, and 76% said that they liked it, and 59% started sympathizing with the idea that we should have a wall. And I was really surprised. I'm thinking, wow, 76% according to CBS polls, and 59% for the wall. I go, it didn't sound like that before, but I'm thinking, well, maybe the president did do a really good speech and he really poured his heart out to the nation. And maybe, you know, he is trying to, you know, do something that would be better than just what he usually does, being a belligerent clown. And what was funny is that after all was said and done, Stephen Colbert brought CBS anchors on and said, so, State of the Union, what do you think? And they're all going, yeah, it was pretty good. 76% polled said he did a really good job. And all of a sudden, Colbert goes, really? What was about it that was so great? And I'm thinking, dude, are you so politically jaded that if a guy gets up and he does a great job at doing his speech, why can't you just give him some credit? And it's not going to make you look bad to give a guy credit if he's doing a great job, even if he is a clown, even if he is a belligerent jerk. I mean, that's been part of the situation since the very beginning he ran. People knew what they got into when they got him, but it's also spreading into those who are belligerent along with him and think that, you know, Trump's going to take care of this, and we're in a time now where we don't have to tolerate you because you're different. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that, you know, you run into a lot of very dangerous waters, because there are plenty of sharks out there, and they love your blood. They want your blood, and they will take your blood if you're not careful.
Definitely. And something that I've noticed is that even after a story is corrected, like the Grin-gate, I think it was called, Bill Maher, for several days after, he still was stating the story wrong. And a lot of, and many of the mainstream media were. I mean, it seemed like it had been debunked really in a matter of hours by YouTubers, by people just simply looking at the video, looking at the whole video and going, hey, this doesn't add up. So the alternative media, or you might just say the people, had blown that story's credibility and shown it to be something else, gosh, within minutes, hours, literally. And then the mainstream media, they just kept on with that steamroller. in many cases, they never reverse themselves. So it seems like that was an opportunity to push a narrative. They saw the opportunity, and they did, and then they feel no need to correct themselves. And if they do, it's in a way that's very, very condescending and not exact enough for anyone to realize who's listening that they've retracted their story.
Well, and you know, the president has declared the media the enemy of the people. Well, the media is not the enemy of the people. But what's going on and what the president should do is he should have somebody analyze what he has to say. I would state this, and I think I'm not wrong in saying so. When a media decides that it's going to side with the resistance, then they are compromised. And so when you have a media that's compromised, that says that we're with the resistance against the president, you can expect them to do 98, maybe 99% reports that are in the negative area of the president, and it depends on who you watch, who you talk to. Fox News is way on the other side. MSNBC is on the other side. CNN, I don't know what the hell CNN thinks they're doing, but it's just a sad, sad time for the media in this country. And they, you know, if they were confident in what they do and what they report, they wouldn't be putting out commercials that say, "We're giving you the facts. We're the ones that get into the trenches." Well, that's your job. And first of all, you know, a person that tries to tell you over and over again that he's not lying to you, sometimes, you know, you use that, methinks that you are protesting too much. And that's where you, it's like when the president says, "Believe me," whenever he says, "Believe me," I always go, I don't. and it's because if somebody says, "You got to believe me," or "You believe me," right? You know, it's like, you know, it gives you that feeling of maybe I don't believe you, or maybe I should reconsider my thoughts about this situation. And I think the media has been compromised, especially when you look at the fact that they're part of the resistance, for one, which means you're not going to get a very even-keeled story about the president if you're looking at CNN or MSNBC. You may get a more, I guess, balanced view from maybe CBS, even though people say they lean liberal. Yeah, maybe they do. In fact, the country used to lean liberal, but not extreme liberal. In fact, I used to always say that the country was conservative, and I think it plays out that the country is mostly conservative. But now the left has become very vociferous in their anger and in their style, that they're becoming almost unbelievably unpredictable and almost not credible. I mean, in fact, very not credible. And so you have to really, really watch, especially when what I do. Being as balanced as I try to be, you have to watch the bias. And you have to, I mean, you pick up on things where reporters throw in their opinion and their bias directly against the president or directly for the president. And I just don't care either way. I believe that politics is theater for the ugly. And I always say conspiracy theory is apolitical. So, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, who's, it's like this case of the blackface case in Virginia. All of these guys are Democrats, and all these guys decided they were dressed in blackface in the 80s, right? Well, everybody's like going, you know, I asked somebody about this. They thought there was Republicans that did it. And I said, no, these are Democrats. What makes you think they're Republicans? Oh, because Democrats don't do that. You know, Democrats aren't racist. I'm going, what? You know, racism goes across all political views. It's not just towards the conservatives, but we have basically done that in this country. We've equated nationalism with Nazism. We have called people fascists without even knowing what the word means. I mean, these are things in context that have basically destroyed the dialogue in this country. It's basically jaded the social cohesion in this country, and the media plays along with it because they know that they're going to get attention if they do play along with it.
Definitely. And we could definitely talk about how, at this point in time, we're living in extremes of identity politics and tribalism, so extreme that both even turn on themselves. Like, you know, where are we in the Overton window. It's, I can't even tell right now. Things are so extreme. But before that, I'd mention something that helps you get ready for your shows, it seems like, is a life of interests. It's something that I think people are lacking these days, is actually just having interests in study that they might want to talk about and collaborate about. So it seems like maybe, am I right, that maybe one of your keys to being able to create so much content is an interest in life, to actually constantly pursuing interests, intellectual interests.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the things I like. I like to pursue intellectual interests. I have an interest in a lot of things. I have an interest in people, really. And I right now I'm having some curiosities as to why people are the way they are. I'm learning about psychology and psychology of swarm intelligence and collective intelligence and how that's affected by artificial intelligence, how that's affected by things like algorithms and social media. And when you really look, I do believe that social media is contributing to the reason why we treat each other with such disdain. Because when you're on the internet and you're in social media, you see nothing more than people who act like total jerks. They're just horrible to each other. And it's because of the fact they're hiding behind their keyboard and they think there's no repercussion to this. And one of the things that I find interesting is that most people don't realize that what they're doing is when they post stuff on Facebook, they're writing it out and they're printing it. It's a printing press, if you will. And there are things like libel and slander that certainly would stop people from being so callous on the internet, because putting something in writing is libel. And I told people this. I said, you know, be careful about what you write about me on my own Facebook page, because I write them a message. I say, what you're doing is libelous. I mean, if you say I'm a certain way and I'm not that way, or if you're saying that I'm with the Illuminati and I'm not, or I'm a gatekeeper for the Jewish banking conspiracy, I just say, you know, guys, look, you know, you can say that all you want, but you're not going to say it on my site, because that's not good, because people will read that. And I remember I got myself kicked off of Wikipedia. And I did that on purpose because I lost a guest because of all these things were written about me on Wikipedia that weren't true, and about my political views. And you know, they said that I said that Sandy Hook was a hoax when I never said it was a hoax. Now, Alex Jones did. And I analyzed what Alex Jones had to say and saying, I can see why, you know, Alex and others are saying it's a hoax. But think about this. I mean, think about the families. Think about, you know, the dose of truth that you have to kind of have with this and understand it. That there are a lot of things that happen in Sandy Hook that point to a conspiracy of negation, but not the fact that children were killed and not the fact that families suffered. And now you see the deposition against Alex Jones because of what he said. And you know, stuff like this has continued into not believing shootings or not believing these events happen. They are false flags. And the scary part is a false flag has nothing to do with this. I mean, people tend to think that a false flag means that they faked it, when a false flag literally is an event that happens, but they blame it on someone else other than ones that commit the crime. And so Alex Jones or whomever is responsible for the false flag skepticism when it comes to shootings like this and other things. And so I have to deal with this. And so I got off Wikipedia because some guy, some moron out in San Diego who runs, he calls himself Media Monitor, got himself some credentials on Wikipedia and started writing all these falsehoods about what I believe and what I think, and saying that I thought that Barack Obama was a birther, or I was a birther against Barack Obama being born in Kenya. I talked about the topic. I speculated about the topic, but I said it doesn't matter whether or not he was born in Kenya. All this doesn't matter. It's all part of the pop culture. And a lot of people don't even know the origins of all these rumors and things. I dig in to find those rumors. One of the things that most people don't understand about the birther idea, where people question Barack Obama's birth, where he was born in Kenya, had nothing to do with the Tea Party. In fact, a guy by the name of Philip Berg, who was a Hillary Clinton supporter, created that. And he pushed the issue along with somebody named Orly Tates, who was a conservative. So, I mean, and then, of course, they throw it at Donald Trump saying he's the guy that pushes it. No, it's been pushed a long time ago, but it was by a very eccentric Democrat who wanted Hillary Clinton as president. But nobody knows this. The media doesn't tell you this. But it's how it was done. You can look it up. I'm not lying. You can go and look it up on the internet and say, yeah, Philip Berg started the rumor. So people don't know the origins of why stories happen, or they don't know the origins of why there is a conspiracy to kind of mislead the public in talking about these issues. And I think it's very important. I feel like I'm righting wrongs at times by saying this is not how it happened. Even within the conspiracy circle, saying, no, that's not exactly how it happened, and that's not exactly what's going on. So we need to use a little common sense here. While there are indications of a conspiracy, we have to cut the fat, get rid of the embellishments, and we have to get down and dirty with the story that is really there. And it may be just as crazy or even more crazy. It's like the Las Vegas shooting. We dug and found that the suspect may have been a drug and child trafficker, and maybe even a gun trafficker for the CIA or some other organization. And after digging some more, they finally revealed that his brother was a trafficker, and maybe he was too. And he was flying kids back and forth from the Philippines. So, but see, people are saying, well, they were using machine guns from helicopters. It was a false flag. I go, yeah, there's something the police isn't telling us, but it's not what you think. I mean, there are things that if you dig deeper, you'll find more interesting conversations rather than just the typical, well, I'm an armchair conspiracy theorist, and I'm going to tell you that this was a false flag because, well, people really didn't die there. I didn't see the bodies. Well, of course you're not going to see the bodies because you're sitting at home watching it on CNN or on MSNBC. They're not going to show you the bodies. So what are you going to do? Say, well, I didn't see any bodies. I didn't see any death certificates. No, you won't, because you are the public. And if the public has a right to know, they will find it themselves. But if the media feels you don't have a right to know, they're not going to reveal it to you.
Definitely. One of our crew over at alternatecurrentradio.com that simulcast us, he just mentioned, Clyde is the Barry White of talk radio. I like that.
I like myself as the Lou Rawls of talk radio. I love Lou. So.
Oh, that works too. Well, I was going to ask, there's so many topics we can go off on, but in focusing a bit on the how to be a great broadcaster, your voice, since you do sound like the Barry White of talk radio, have you had to take voice lessons? How did you cultivate your voice, or is that just natural? Because you have a great broadcaster voice, and I know that I always listen to myself after I record things, and I suffer through listening to myself, but it's how you get better. Like, how have you trained your voice, or was it just natural? Did you get incredibly lucky?
Cigars and scotch. No, that's, I always say that, cigars and scotch. And maybe that's partly right.
I find red wine helps, yeah.
Yeah, anything that helps. So smoke a bunch of cigars and have some scotch. I don't know. When I first got into radio, I did something. Okay, this is the story of radio jocks and how they grow up and get their voices to sound, or at least sound like, you're kind of competent. Usually when, back in the day, when radio announcers want to get into radio, they do something called puking. And that's where you go, hi, I'm on the show. What's going on? It's good to hear you. That kind of stuff. We call it puking. And we're told all our lives when we're growing up, doing, radio, that kind of thing doesn't work. Yet you hear these announcers, announcing World Wrestling Federation, blah, 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 they're puking. And I'm thinking, God, these guys are getting money puking. And here I am, just doing my voice normally. But what had happened, and this is the absolute truth, I used to have one of those radio voices where it's like the puking voice. And I actually was doing morning radio. I was a producer and a writer, and I did news. And I worked with several morning shows, and I still had that pukey voice, that little, twinge to my voice that made it sound almost annoying. I had some guy talk to me, and he says, do you really talk that way? And I go, what do you mean? And he says, well, do you go home to your girlfriend, and do you go, hey, honey, let's have sex? I go, no, I don't do that. And so he says, well, how would you talk to your wife or your girlfriend if you came home? I go, well, hi, honey, how are you? He says, why don't you talk like that? And I said, what? He says, yeah, get yourself in the training mode to just talk. And if you talk, the voice will come naturally. And I said, wow, okay. So I was actually paid, get all of this, I got paid six figures when I was, this was the 1980s, 1990s. I got paid six figures just to talk, because I had this program director saying, I'm going to pay you six figures if you just cut the crap and you start using your voice, you start loving your voice, and you do things to make your voice sound, or you try to make your voice sound more personable. And I said, oh, okay. So over time, I believe it's kind of like an instrument or kind of like a muscle. The more you work it, the more it tends to, sound better. Not only that, I have a big head, so I'm sure that when I talk, it echoes through my brain and my skull and vibrates my brain and comes back into the microphone, and then it goes up into the ionosphere, comes back down into your radio, and somehow in the ionosphere, it cooks my voice to make it sound really good. But it's just a matter of, I think people appreciate more, not the low voice or even a voice that's even commanding, but they appreciate a voice that sounds like you give it, you know, you care. You know what I'm saying? So you have a voice that sounds like you care. You have a voice that's not trying to sound overly angry or overly happy. You're just being yourself. You're telling a story. It's actually like if I was sitting with you right now, which I am in a way, sitting you right now, we're talking over coffee, I'd be doing the same thing on the air. I'm talking to you. I mean, sure, I have to, you know, kind of put my voice up a little bit to talk over those rock and roll intros and outros and everything else I do. But then by the end of the night, I'm just talking. And I'm pretty animated when I talk, but I'm just saying I'm just talking to you. And that's all I do.
I like that because I know I'm always working on getting out of interview mode and just getting into conversation mode. The trick is to forget there's microphones and just act like you're in a cafe somewhere drinking coffee or drinking wine or whatever works. And you're just talking. And it's a challenge to I find that one thing that really screws people up is they can be great conversationalists, but you put a microphone in front of them, you turn it on, and they just panic and they can't speak.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why you tell them that a microphone's not on and then they just talk to you. It's always been a trick when you want to get a story. I remember one time we were interviewing a pastor about demon possession. And I went in and I had a video camera and I sat down with him. I was asking questions and the video camera was flashing and he just couldn't tell me anything. And he was just all talking to me beforehand. Like, oh, this is going to be a great interview. This guy's amazing. And then the minute the camera came on, he was just being very hesitant in speaking and he was very uncomfortable. And so I kind of whispered to the producer, I said, turn the camera off or pretend like you're turning the camera off. And then once he said, okay, we're done. And I just sat back and I said, well, thank you. And then I just started the interview again without the idea that we're having some presentation, and he just unloaded. It was the best stuff ever. It was like, you know, when people are feeling at ease and you're talking to them rather than just talking at them, they're more than willing to give you information. They're more willing to talk to you because they feel like they're talking to a friend. And that's the important thing. Is a lot of people tell me, you know, when they listen to the show, they say, I feel like that, you know, I know you. Or I feel like that, you know, you're a friend. And it's funny because when I'm out in public, I mean, I haven't been on network TV for a while. And I go out in public and I merely say things like, you know, how much for the, you know, for the Coke or how much for that at the store. And somebody says, you're Clyde Lewis. And I say, well, yes, hi. And I go, how'd you know? And they say, well, that voice is just, you know, I hear that voice every night when I listen to the radio show and I just recognize it the minute you speak. So yeah, my speaking voice is my voice on the radio and people hear it in public and they know it's me. So it just seems to work to have that kind of attitude when you're doing a radio program.
I like that. It does seem like it is a muscle. It's like any other skill. The more you do it, the better you get at it. Because I know that when I listen to myself after I do an interview, I go, what is that voice? What am I doing? You know, why am I not just talking? So that's a great tip there for broadcasters. And do you have any rituals for success? Basically, when you're getting ready for a show, are there any physical or mental rituals that you do to basically get in that zone to be ready?
Starbucks, flat white, four Splenda. That's my ritual.
Starbucks?
Venti flat white, four Splenda. Now, I'd like an Ariana Grande, but they don't have that drink yet. But I'm just saying that, flat white, four Splenda, and then I study like crazy. I just sip coffee and study. And that's what I do. I mean, it's just the idea of you have to be aware, interested in life, interested in other people's lifestyles, interested in what, you know, the underground is thinking about, not being afraid to take risks and take chances with stories or take risks or take chances in doing something you wouldn't normally do. Be spontaneous, even in your life, be spontaneous. And try something so you have that experience so you can say, well, I can speak with experience. I mean, I tried that. And, people who are in talk radio, a lot of them, you know, they have their political views pretty much put together, but they don't have their lives put together. And when you ask them just simple things like, so, you know, what did you do yesterday? They can't tell you. They don't know how. I remember one time there was an election in Utah, and it was a number of senators, a number of congressmen and commissioners and all these people who wanted to do a debate. And at the time, I was the only credible news guy that could handle the debate and do a debate and be the moderator. And I said to someone, I said, you know, can I do something that's a little different? And I'd like to not only do a debate, but during my show, I'd like to bring some of these people together and play Trivial Pursuit. And I think it would be interesting to see just how in touch these senators are by playing a game of Trivial Pursuit with them on the radio. And they allowed me to do it. And so you got to hear just how these people are, whether they're real or whether they're just a bunch of people that are buried in their politics. And it was really interesting to see how they answered the questions when you gave them Trivial Pursuit questions, and whether or not they have the knowledge to answer the questions of pop culture or answer questions about sports or answer questions about just the normal things that people deal with on a day-to-day basis. I mean, hell, if you can't have top of the mind awareness of the, I mean, I remember one time I went for a job interview with a program director, and he asked me, what was the last movie you saw? And I told him, and he says, you got the job. I said, what's that about? And he said, well, he says, I'm not going to hire someone who the last movie they saw was Jaws. He says, you know, if you're not going out to movies, if you're not going out to see rock shows, if you're not going out to see country music shows, if you're not going out, I mean, if you're not, you know, spreading your life out, you know, have you seen a hip hop show? Have you gone out to a rap show? Do you have a, you know, what kind of music do you listen to? And do you go beyond the type of music you listen to? Are you a person who, you know, sure, I prefer heavy metal, rock and roll. I mean, I just got back from a Kiss concert. But, you know, I'm not above going to a Judy Collins concert, which I have, or a Stevie Wonder concert. Or I'm not afraid of hanging out at a hip hop club or even going to a gay bar and hanging out with people who are homosexual. I don't have a preference here. And I'm not going to shun people away, because people are people. They're human beings, and everybody has a story. Everybody has something they want to share. Everybody has something they want to contribute. And to just be so biased and bigoted, it just kills the experience of what life is all about, in my opinion.
In the 25 years that you've been broadcasting, are there any insights that you might have that really have come from 25 years that a person just starting out wouldn't have? Like, what's a bit of that wisdom that you've hammered out over 25 years of broadcasting?
I always say, be like a frog when you're in broadcasting. Jump on your lily pad, enjoy your time on your lily pad, but don't be afraid to hop to another lily pad. And that is when you're young in radio. When you're older in radio, you're not so swift in jumping to another lily pad because you're getting older. And quite frankly, you can be, you know, shut down. I mean, Rick Dees got that when Ryan Seacrest got his job. And no one knows why he got his job, but he got his job. And it's because when you get older, sometimes you find yourself being more expendable. But when you're younger, you're able to get into a radio gig, and then you can jump to another radio gig, another radio gig, and then finally you find yourself in a place where you're settled, you're getting good money, and you don't want to ruin that. And so that's exactly what I do, is that don't be afraid to, you know, get out of your comfort zone. Try something. If you don't like it, you can always go back to your comfort zone. But, you know, that's what I would say. I'd say as somebody in radio, the only way you're going to succeed is if you have to get out of your comfort zone. And here's another thing, too. Anyone can get on the radio and be a personality. But what really, really matters is whether or not you can produce. And I would say take a step back, find someone that you really admire in radio, and ask if you can produce their show. Go in and be a producer. Go in and be a call screener. Go in and be a guy that's doing stuff in the background. Say that you had a part in that. Watch and learn from these professionals that can be mentors. And then from there, develop your own style. And I promise you, I tell all of the guys I work with, I have some very competent producers. Even I have interns come in. And by the end of their experience, they become producers. They know how to create a montage. They know what good radio sounds like. And they leave with that experience. And then they can take that, if they want to be a producer on another show, or they can develop the talent that's needed to both produce and give a product that everybody wants to listen to. And that's the whole point. So be a producer before you ever consider being a talent.
Definitely be a producer. I'd like that, because the producer, truly, they can do anything once they get that skill down. It reminds me of something that Steve Jobs said. A quote of his was, "Real artists ship," and I always like that.
I mean, and real CEOs are not afraid to get their hands dirty because they've had their hands dirty before. I remember consultants would come into radio stations and they just sit in a radio meeting and they drop a bunch of records on a table and say, "Shut up and play this." I look at them and I say, "Well, you mean you're getting paid $10,000 to tell me to shut up and play this?" I go, "That's not cool." But then one day I was in the studio and we had a consultant come in. He not only said, "Shut up and play this," but he was able to board up. He was able to produce some remarkable radio. And I'm saying, no wonder you're a good producer and a good, I said, no wonder you're a good consultant because you're a good producer.
You also mentioned be spontaneous. And I've always felt that to be spontaneous is to have confidence. And that's one thing I know I look at is when I'm getting ready to interview somebody, you just have to have that, I guess, just confidence. Like, this is going to work. The right questions are going to come. So spontaneity, really, to me, it's confidence.
Yeah, and the thing is that most of the time, another thing you do, and people will make fun of you, but talk to yourself. You know, go into a room, look into the mirror, and talk to yourself, and that helps as well. And most of the time, you know, that's what radio is you're talking to yourself until somebody rings the phone. You're going, "Wait, somebody's listening to me." So, I mean, get used to the idea that you're talking to yourself. Learn different ways to inflect sentences for meaning. Like I say, you know, be able to be molded, be able to be malleable, and that'll work for you. And listen, be teachable. Don't be a person that's going to go in and say, "I'm going to be the best talent in the world." I mean, hell, even I, you know, being in the position that I'm in right now with the talk show that I have and the many stations, the many listeners, I'm still, to this day, being taught. And I have wonderful consultants that come in and tell me, "Well, if you do this, maybe it'll improve you in this regard." And, you know, I can be a jerk and say, "Wait a minute, with 22 years of experience on the radio and the way my voice sounds, I'm the Barry White of radio. You're not going to tell me what to do." Well, no, that's not going to work. I mean, I'm still growing. And not only that, but you find yourself, you may wake up and find yourself irrelevant. And if that happens, boy, you're really going to be screwed because no one's going to want to listen to you. No one's going to want to even relate to you because you're still off somewhere, you know, thinking that this is cool when in reality, you know, you're 55 and you're winding up sounding like your grandfather. That's one of the things I worry about. And that's why I like to spend time with young people. And I like, you know, I like to find out what my stepson's up to, what my son's up to. That was one of the things, one of the best compliments I ever got is I took my my son to, and he was like in his 20s and I had 20s and 30s. I don't know, something around there, I don't know what his age was, but he's getting up there in age because I'm getting up there in age. And I took him to a Kiss concert. And he said to me, he says, "You know what I like about you, Dad?" And I said, "What's that?" And he says, "You're relevant." And I thought, that's the best compliment I think I can ever get from someone. My own son telling me I'm relevant, because that's what you want to hear. You want to hear that what you have to say is important, it's relevant, it's getting into the hearts and minds of the people. And what you're doing is you're doing good every time you open that microphone. If you go on the air thinking that you're going to ruin someone's life or you're going to be negative or what have you, it's not going to win people over. People want to hear a story. They want to hear a story that applies to them, that makes them either laugh, cry, or get scared. And that's what radio was supposed to be in the beginning. And all my inspirations from Orson Welles to Dr. Demento to whomever, they always were there in the back of my mind when I opened that microphone.
So I think we had an hour scheduled with you. So that's coming to a close soon, I believe, unless we have two. But I guess one thing I'd like to touch on before we go is it seems like right now this is the first time in history, as far as I'm aware at least, that people have had the option for truth, the option to actually listen to truth. The truth has been available. And I'd call that the alternative media. I mean, I know there's a lot of words for it, but I'll just be sloppy and say alternative media. Like, the truth is out there, as the X-Files said. And do you think that, I just wanted to ask you, from the position that you're sitting, does it seem like maybe some of the craziness that we're seeing in the country, the extreme identitarian politics, the extreme tribalism, is coming from basically truth has entered, like, America's bloodstream?
No, I think that the lack of discernment has ended up in the American bloodstream. I think that, you know, truth has become, it's become opinion, and that's not truth. I mean, truth, remember the old adage, the old axiom, truth shall set you free, but what you don't remember is it also pisses you off. I don't think truth is pissing people off enough. I think that people are pissed off already, and they think they have the truth, when in reality you give them the truth, and if it's not politically jiving with them, or if it's not something that they believe in towards their God or whatever, they're going to reject it outright, and that's not good. And that's why we have so many people believing certain things about certain people that aren't true. That's why we have things like Comet Ping Pong, and that's why we have all this other stuff going on, is people want to believe that these people are this way, and they're not. I get that all the time with me. People think that I'm some rich cat who's living in a mansion somewhere. In fact, back when the wall argument started happening, people go, I'll bet Clyde Lewis has a wall around his mansion. And I wrote the person back, and I go, do you want to see where I live? Do you want to see where I live and notice I don't have a wall around my house? Do you want to see where I live and notice that I'm not rich and I don't have a mansion? I go, I want to be rich. I would love to have a mansion, but I don't. So shut up. Don't say things that aren't true. And don't assume things that aren't true. So no, it's not about truth at all anymore. It's about clicks. It's about what can I say so outrageous I get clicks. It's what my opinion is, and that is the truth. And I can say, well, your opinion is not the truth. Your opinion is subjective. I think that people need to use more objectivity, and I think they need to speak more. I mean, my wife teaches me this. She teaches me to speak more in E-prime, which is a way where you're saying things like, well, it appears that this is so. It allegedly is this. Not that you're definitely saying it is, but you're saying, you know, it appears that way. Yeah, it does. Because people are so cocksure of how their so-called truth is the truth. But if you look at something from the respect of, well, could be this, could be that, could be anything, more people are more, I think, willing to listen to you when you speak that way rather than saying this is a definite truth and you're wrong. Everybody thinks they have to be contrarian. Everybody thinks that this is a besting match. And we know what you don't stand for, but what do you stand for? Nobody will tell you that. They'll say, well, this is what I don't like, and this is what I don't stand for. I can't stand this. But just say something. So what do you stand for? And they'll stop and they'll go, well, I don't know. That's what's wrong with the country. That's what's wrong. That's why we have this tribalism, this sectarianism, is because, you know, people are angry, but they don't know what they're angry about. Literally, they don't.
Really appreciate you taking the time for us. I mean, so radiantcreators.com, we thank you, and the guys who simulcast us, alternatecurrentradio.com. I mean, it's been great. Thanks so much for being on the show. Do you have any closing thoughts? Where can people get a hold of you?
Groundzeromedia.org. My Facebook is available as well. You can go to Ground Zero on Facebook. That's where I do all my updates. It's Ground Zero Radio, facebook.com/Ground Zero Radio. We're on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/Ground Zero Media and talkstreamlive.com. So you can listen to us all over the country. We're on iTunes. We're everywhere. Download us. And whoever is my 100,000th like on Facebook, thank you. I finally made my 100,000 today. I'm pretty happy.
Thanks for listening to Radiant Creators. Check out more content at radiantcreators.com. If you like the show, give it a like, share this, comment, keep the conversation going. You can also find us at alternatecurrentradio.com, where there's this show and a lot more.